Welcome to Math 1A, and for many of you, welcome to Cal, one of the greatest universities, but in peril, still great though. Here's an outline of my lecture today. Most of my lectures will be on the board, but today, since there are certain things to discuss that are easier to convey through the computer, I'll use my computer. So we'll talk about the course logistics for a while. Then I'll give you the recipe for success in this and other math classes. And then we'll start with a preview of what calculus is. And if you have any questions at any moment, just raise your hand and speak loudly. Hopefully you can all find the chair, although maybe not. Let me maybe start first addressing enrollment questions. So I do not deal with enrollment issues at all. I have no control over that. Unfortunately, at the math department, the person who did this very efficiently is gone. She retired. So I recommend that you go to Thomas Brown, the undergraduate student affairs officer in room 965 Evans Hall. And if he's not there, then you should go to Jennifer Pinney, who is in 964 Evans Hall across the hall. And hopefully they'll be able to help you. But things are a little bit tricky these days because obviously these people are very busy and they are really not, the person who dealt with these issues is gone. But I hope you all get in the class, but do not email me with enrollment questions, please. Okay, so first of all, my name is Slobodan Simic. My office is on the 10th floor of Evans Hall, 1073. My office hours will be Mondays 9 to 10, 11 to 12, and Wednesdays 11 to 12. But you can also make an appointment. I'll be available at other times. My email is here, S-I-M-I-C, my last name, at math. And the course website, you can see it here. You should bookmark it, and you should go there frequently, especially in the beginning of the semester. I'll be posting all the important course information on it, although we will gradually move to Piazza, and I'll tell you more about Piazza in a second. You probably already, some of you already enrolled in Piazza. So if you just go to the math department website, you can find me, and then you can click on the appropriate links, and you'll get to the webpage. So what you can find there is everything you need to know, more or less. You know, the grading policy, things about tests, exam dates, first homework, and so on and so forth. But we'll go over that in a second. So if there are any questions, just please stop me and let me know. Okay. So the text is, I even have it here, unless I forgot it. Oh, it's here. So many of you asked me about the text already. It's this new edition of Calculus for UC Berkeley. It's officially the 7th edition. Now, of course, how much does the 7th edition differ from the 6th edition? Well, maybe the main difference is it's more expensive, but I'm not sure, because that's what they do. That's the reason they do these things, unfortunately, because since math professors have very little control over math publishing. But this is a good book. It's been used for decades. And it's geared toward Berkeley students, so it covers the material for 1A and for 1B. Now, if you have the 6th edition or some previous editions, chances are the sections are more or less the same, pretty much the same, I'm pretty sure. I haven't compared them, but it covers the same material, just the exercises are numbered differently, most likely. Maybe there is very little difference there as well, but I don't know. So if you have one of the earlier editions, most likely it will be fine to keep it. The only thing is you have to be ready to deal with this annoying thing of comparing the exercises that I assigned from this edition with the actual exercises in your book. So maybe you can just pair up with somebody who has the 7th edition. I may even, in the beginning, if I have time, sort of scan the pages, the exercise pages, and post them on Piazza, and you could see what problems are on the homework. So you have the ISBN numbers, ISBN 13, ISBN 10. It's what they're selling here at the bookstore. And that's the book. And we'll cover just the first five or six chapters up to integration. And then in 1B, you will study the rest of the book. Exam. So mark your calendars. Midterm 1 is going to be on Wednesday in this classroom, Wednesday, September 19th. From 10:10 to 11. 10:10 is 10 o'clock Berkeley time. So it's a 50-minute exam. Midterm 2 is more or less 5 weeks from the first midterm, also Wednesday, October 24th, in class. Since it's kind of crowded, I may actually reserve some extra rooms, and maybe one of the GSIs will take his or her section into that room. We'll talk about that later. The final exam is on Monday, December 10th, unfortunately at 8 a.m., but at least you'll be done early, 8 to 11. So if you have other courses which have the final exam on the same day, I really cannot move your final exam. I can't give an early final or late final. There are no makeup tests. You can imagine the logistical nightmare of trying to schedule all these disparate exams for various people. So we cannot give you any makeup exams. You should count on, you can miss a midterm because of the grading policy, but then you really have to take the other midterm and the final. So any questions so far? Okay, so mark these dates. They're also on the website. Let's see. Homework. So there will be homework, weekly homework, which is really essential for you to do. There's no other way you can succeed in this class without, if you don't do the homework. It's going to be roughly about 18 to 20 problems each week. I will pick, since students often complain that problems on exams are harder than problems on the homework, don't worry, I'll pick more challenging problems from the homework because it's better for you. And then you will be more prepared for the exams. So homework one has been posted already. It's on the website. It's also on Piazza. This first homework, only this one, is due next Friday, since this is our first meeting, Friday. So, but otherwise, homework assignments will be due in your section on Wednesdays, except for the PDP section. I think it's section 313, which means only Tuesdays and Thursdays. For them, the homework will be due on Tuesdays. Okay, except for the first one, which is doing next Thursday. Okay, let's see. You may collaborate with others in solving your homework, but you should write your own solutions. And in fact, the Piazza, this online platform you're using, is very collaborative. It's kind of like Wikipedia, and this is another tool for your collaboration. But when you're writing down the solutions, you should really write them down by yourself. Otherwise, you're basically doing yourself a disservice because you will not be prepared for the exams and you will not just learn the material. It's a cliche to say, but it's true. The only way to learn math is by doing it, and you do your math by doing the homework. And of course, taking solutions from the web or from previous years is illegal. I don't have to say that. You're grown-ups. You're in college. So any questions about the homework? All right. Yes? Oh, yeah, I'll tell you more about that. It's because of the grading policy. Then instead of that midterm, the final exam would count. So that's the policy. But let's discuss that a little bit later. Every midterm will be curved, and we'll take care of the issues that arise when you teach such a big class with many different GSIs who may have different grading policies and so on and so forth. We'll take care of that. Quizzes. So there will be, since we cannot grade, we don't have graders, unfortunately, and we cannot ask your GSIs to grade every single homework problem. There will be weekly quizzes based on the homework that's due that week. So if your homework is due on Wednesday, the following Friday you will have a quiz, except for the PDP section where it's a little different. And the quiz will be a short quiz, just 10 minutes, maybe 15, maybe later in the semester when the problems are more complex. And you will just the GSI will just pick one problem straight from the homework. Okay, to make this way you can just show your GSI, I did my homework and I understood everything. And if you really did the homework, then you should have no problem doing the quizzes because it's going to be taken straight from that homework. Do that week. And again, there will be no makeup quizzes unless quizzes are easier to arrange to make up. So if you are maybe in the Cal band or if you're an athlete or something like that, and if your GSI is willing, you may be able to arrange a makeup quiz, talk to your GSI about that. But on the other hand, three or maybe even more, maybe even four quizzes will be dropped at the end, so you're allowed to just skip a few quizzes here and there. Okay, any questions about the quizzes? Okay, here's the grading policy. So your section, so there are three components, the section grade, the midterm grade, and the final grade. Actually, there's a fourth component, which is on top of all that, extra, there's extra points, and that's participation. Participation is both in class, in your discussion section, and on Piazza. But let me first tell you about the section grade. It has two subcomponents. One is homework, only 5%. And then quizzes, 15%. Midterms are worth 20% each, but each midterm itself will be curved. And then the final exam is worth 40%. Okay? Now, so as I said before, the lowest midterm grade will be, the lower one, will be dropped automatically and replaced by the final exam grade. Can be dropped and replaced by the final exam grade. So you can opt out of that, but usually it's in your interest to, for us to count the higher grade. So as I said, we'll curve everything, and section grades will be curved to account for different grading policies of different GSIs and all that. In terms of incomplete grades, you should really not count on getting an incomplete, only if you have a medical emergency, you're not able to make it to the final exam, and you're passing the class, so you're getting a C or higher grade, then you may get an incomplete. But usually those are not given, and if you do get an incomplete, then you take a final exam the following semester. Any questions about the grading policy? There's more about this on the website, which I'm going to show you in a second. No calculators. This is calculus, but we're not going to calculate using calculators. You're welcome to use your computer. You know, if you have a Mac, you have this, Grapher. That can be a useful tool at home, but you're not allowed to use that in on exams. And please turn off all of your gadgets, cell phones, iPhones, and so on, during class. If you're taking notes on your computer, you can do it, but it's in your interest not to surf the web, but actually pay attention to the lecture if you're going through the trouble of getting here on time. So let's see. Any questions? Okay. So what's Piazza? So how many of you have actually activated your account in Piazza? Okay, that's good. So try to do this as soon as possible. If you have not been invited to join Piazza, let me know, because I just basically downloaded the your emails as of maybe 5-6 days ago. But in the meantime, enrollment may have changed. Maybe some students dropped and some added. So if you haven't been invited to join, you should email me, and I will invite you to join. So Piazza is the sort of an online platform for taking care of out-of-class questions and answers. You know, this is a big class. Chances are, many of you will have the same question, and if I have to answer it again and again in my office hours, that's not a very efficient of doing that. So this way, if you've seen what it looks like, there's a dashboard. On the left of the dashboard, there is a list of questions and with answers, and questions are tagged. So it's very easy to search through various questions, questions about homework, about exams, about a particular homework problem. So it's a very collaborative medium in the sense that, you can ask a question, another student can answer, a GSI can answer, I can answer, I can approve a student's answer, I can endorse it, I can endorse a GSI's answer, I can give my own answer. The nice thing is that it also supports LaTeX. You may not have heard of LaTeX. LaTeX is a program for typing math, for writing math. And you just have to know the basics of LaTeX. Basically, you put $2 signs at the beginning and at the end, and to write the math formula, just write something, and you have to learn a little bit of the syntax, and you insert it between these double dollar marks, and what shows up in the dashboard is a nicely typeset formula that everybody can read. Because if you ever try to type math in an email message, it's very, very clumsy and hard to read. So I will give you a little handout on the basics of LaTeX. The nice thing about Wikipedia is that you can get answers to your questions much more quickly than waiting to come to my office hours or the office hours of your GSIs. I remember last semester when I used it, like, question was posed at 10 p.m. and GSI was awake and answered it like 5 minutes later, and everybody can see it. There's also the option of posting private questions that only I can see. That's also fine. There's also an option of anonymous posting, which has its pluses and minuses. The pluses are that if you should not really think this way, but if you think your question is stupid, which I don't think any question should be really called stupid, especially not in this class, you're welcome to post anonymously. But I remember last semester there was some abuse of that. So if there's abuse of anonymous posting, I'm going to disable that. What else? Yeah, so instead of emailing me your questions, you should really pose them to Piazza. Okay. So it's a free system. It's actually a small company in Palo Alto. They are still struggling. There are no ads, which is nice. It's all confidential. Only people who are enrolled in this class can see questions and answers. And so it's a great great tool. So any questions about Piazza? Okay. So the first homework is already there. There's some other information that's on Piazza already. Student Learning Center is one of the places where you can get help. It's in Cesar Chavez building. And the drop-in tutoring hours are Monday through Thursday, 10 to 4. Is that right, Nathan?
Yeah.
Okay. So you're very lucky that there will also be an adjunct course to Math 1A. It's called Math 98. And it'll be taught by Nitin Kohli. Is that how you pronounce it, Kohli? Yeah. Who you will soon find out is an excellent teacher. He was my, what were you officially, note taker last year? He was a study group leader, and people really raved about him. So you want to get up so people can see you? Here he is. He's a math major, and so you can learn a lot about him. He's going to tell you more about Math 98. It's a one-unit course, and it integrates academic content from the lecture with study strategies and techniques. And so on and so forth. So you'll learn more about it, I think, on Monday.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's supposed to meet Tuesdays and Thursdays from 3:30 to 5 in 1:30 in Chavez. Okay? Math 98. Okay, now, a few words about studying at the university. I don't want to, offend you by saying the obvious, but, obviously you're no longer in high school, so you have to revise your expectations a little bit, or maybe you've already done that, but just to make sure you did, this means that you should expect the material in lecture to be covered at a much faster pace than in high school. Most likely, maybe you went to a really good high school and you learned, multivariable calculus and all the, kinds of fancy math, in which case you should not be taking this class. But, you should really expect us to go pretty fast in lecture. You can also, you should also understand it is your responsibility to do your own learning. So that includes, number one, reading the textbook ahead of the lecture. So all the readings are posted. You know exactly when we are going to cover what. So you should read ahead, and that will make it much easier for you to follow the lecture. Let's see. How does one read a math textbook? Well, very differently from reading, Anna Karenina or something like that. You have to have pencil and paper ready, and you should expect to read it at a much slower pace than reading, a sci-fi book. That means that you need to really think about every single sentence. You need to fill in the gaps in the reasoning in the book. You should, scribble on the piece of paper trying to explain to yourself what the book is trying to say. You should interrogate the book, in a sense. I just cannot teach you everything in the classroom. The lecture time is at a premium, and we cannot cover every single detail. And that would actually not be very good for you, because that would not leave you enough space for your own thinking. So I will just provide a framework, together with the GSIs, to guide you in doing your own learning, essentially. Okay, so you really have to become independent learners. And I guess I said this already, that you should really read the textbook in advance for comprehension. So, for example, for next time, read sections 1.1 and 1.2. Exams, what can you expect? What kind of problems can you expect on exams? Well, there will be new problems, but they will be based on the homework. So they will be approximately the same level of difficulty. You'll get a better idea about exams from all the exams which I'm going to give you. Your GSIs will also, will go with you through old exams, and I'll give you links to my old exams as well. So this is what you can expect for me. So here is a recipe, one possible recipe for success in this and other math classes. Of course, one recipe doesn't work for everyone. Maybe you should figure out your own recipe, but number one is to read the book in advance, which I already said, and so in a sense, you should interrogate the book. You should ask questions constantly. The best way to learn math and science in general, or actually to go through life, is to ask a lot of questions and to take nothing for granted. You should come to lecture and discussion. And pay attention, you know, turn off your gadgets and participate, be active. I'm not going to force you to come to lecture or to discussion. I think it's in your best interest to do so, but if you choose to skip a lecture or a discussion here and there, then it's your responsibility to make up for what was covered, to read and go through the exercises and then talk to me and your GSI about that. Do the homework with understanding, not just mechanically, because some problems will be sort of very computational, but you should do them with understanding so that you really get the essence out of the problem. And in the end, after doing, you know, all of your homework problems, you should sort of get a bird's eye view of what was covered in that section. And of course, ask think critically and ask questions. Yeah. I don't recommend any, you don't need any calculators. I mean, you all have computers that have all kinds of, you know, capabilities that are sufficient for like graphing functions, but you don't need any calculators for this course. I'm not going to be using them. If you have a calculator, fine, you know, use it. I certainly don't know how to use it. I don't plan to require you to use it. So, of course, if there will be some problems that require calculation, few of them, very few of them, any computer can now do these types of calculations. But this is not a course in numerical computation, numerical analysis. Okay, so one thing we will try to encourage you to do as much as possible is to think critically and ask a lot of questions. Keep that in mind. And for fun, there's another book that you can check out besides this book. It's by Larry Gonick called The Cartoon Guide to Calculus. He's a guy who used to teach calculus at Harvard for many years, and he wrote a book, Cartoon Guide, that's very nice and actually very well written. Also, there's a cartoon guide to physics, I think, and some maybe even chemistry. Let me give you one page from this book. It's about speed, velocity, and change. It says, calculus is the mathematics of change, and change is mysterious. Some things grow imperceptibly, others zoom, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, some of the concepts are actually explained quite well, and I think you can probably find this book online. I think that he made it available for free. So, any questions? Let's see, we have half an hour left. So this is the first part of my lecture because of the logistics. Are there any questions about the logistics? You may have met your GSIs already. I think there was some section that was supposed to meet before this lecture, or you will meet them later. I think that there's still one person that I know all of them except for one. Things are kind of in flux. But I will post their names, email addresses, and office hours on the website as soon as I actually know who they are and what their office hours are. Yes? Right, yes. So first homework is due next Friday, and you will have a quiz from that homework, yeah. Okay, so you can discuss 1.1 and 1.2 on Monday and Tuesday. Yes? I'm not going to use BSpace, most likely. Piazza is sort of like, you know, a replacement for it, and I'm not sure if you can actually type math nicely in BSpace. In Piazza, you can. Yeah.
Can we have our homework on Piazza?
Yeah. I posted it on Piazza, and eventually, I mean, I'll post it in both places for your convenience. But it's on Piazza and on the web page. Yes. Does Piazza list that?
Yeah.
No, it doesn't. But I can try to copy the table. Let me show you the web page. Let's see. I think I'm online. Okay. Can you see? Okay, this is a little bit weird. Okay, so this is the web class website, and here's the syllabus. So today we'll do the preview, and on Monday we'll do 1.1 and 1.2 and so on and so forth. So I don't know if you can do tables in Piazza. You probably can, but I'll try to put it there. Okay, so you know, here you have links to you know, exam dates, grading policy, everything. There are some links about calculus, calculus links, and so on and so forth. Here's an algorithm or a table that tells you who to ask if you have a certain type of question. So, okay, any other questions? Okay, let's see. So let's go back to this. Okay, so if you're in a question, let's talk about, you know, some, you know, general words about calculus, preview of calculus. So right off the bat, calculus is one of the greatest inventions or discoveries of humankind. And without calculus, there would be no modern world. So that's for sure. The inventors or discoverers of calculus, you may have heard, although there is some dispute about this, are Isaac Newton on the left and Gottfried Leibniz on the right, although there was some ideas of calculus that existed before them, way back in India and China, but the modern version of calculus was sort of invented or discovered by them, whichever way you want. So calculus is used everywhere, as you probably already know. Astronomy, people wanted to know how to calculate trajectories of planets and moons and so on. Biology, chemistry, communications, there would be no internet without calculus for sure. Economics, engineering, well, you name it, wherever. Physics, of course. In fact, calculus was invented to provide language for Newtonian physics. So here are some central ideas and concepts of calculus. So the central idea, and a quite amazing idea if you think about it, is the idea that the real world can really be understood in terms of real numbers. There's a famous article that I recommend, that I encourage you to read at some point in your student career, by a Nobel Prize winning physicist, Eugene Wigner. He was a professor at Princeton. The article is called The Unreasonable Effectiveness of Mathematics. Because if you think about it deeply, you see that there is really no reason why mathematics would be so effective in describing the real world. Because in mathematics, we deal with ideal straight lines, ideal circles, triangles. We never see those. We've never seen those, and we will never see them. They do not exist. Yet these types of things and this type of language does describe the real world so well that we can predict the trajectory of Mercury with amazing accuracy. We can predict the arrival of Halley's Comet. We can understand the micro world. We can build bridges. We can build highways, cars, computers, and so on and so forth. So there is something really amazing here if you think about deeply. Of course, we take it for granted, but we don't really know why it works so well. So here are real numbers, natural, integer, whole numbers, rational numbers, and so on. Now, then, the profound invention that made this idea work is the invention of the concept of the mathematical function. So here's a function. And this semester will be devoted in this class to studying functions of one variable and values in the real numbers. The properties of these functions, really, that are very deep and that are central that are in the foundations of calculus, are the property called continuity and differentiability. So here is an example of a continuous function that's not differentiable at one point, and here's an example of a differentiable function. Of course, I'll tell you later what these mean, how they're defined. The crucial definition of calculus is the definition of instantaneous speed and the definition of the area under a curve. And it's kind of very unintuitive but true that these two definitions and these two concepts are related to each other. We'll talk about it in a second. The ancillary definition is that of a limit, but not quite this kind of limit, not the speed limit. In mathematics, they would call it a speed bound. But what is a limit? We'll discuss it in a second. Okay, now let's see. What does the word calculus actually mean? Well, it's a word coming from Latin, and there are also some, I think, Greek origins. Calculus means a pebble, a small pebble. It's because pebbles were used by Romans for calculating. Apparently, there was some sort of a cart that would sort of dispense one pebble at regular time intervals, and this is how people used to measure distances. So that's the meaning of the word, but of course, it's what we mean by calculus is very different from the original meaning. So here are some questions that calculus helps answer, and if you read this entire book, if you do all the exercises, then you actually will be able to answer these questions. Why do planets move along elliptical orbits around the sun? Why not, some other shape? How far from an airport should a pilot start to descend? That's a very important question, of course. Calculus helps it answer. Where is the best place to sit in the movie theater so you have the biggest, angle of view? In fact, I think there are some exercises in this book that discuss these types of questions. How do rays of light refract through water? Well, I think we'll actually do this exercise. We'll derive the law of refraction of light through water. How can we distribute water flow among turbines in a hydroelectric power station to maximize the total energy production? That's another question. And so on. Almost anything you can think about, there was some component of calculus in that. Okay, moving on. So let's talk a little bit about this idea of instantaneous velocity. So suppose you have an object that's moving along a straight line. Okay, so like this, a car. Many of you have probably seen this, so this is just a preview, but we'll make these things precise pretty soon. So the average velocity, let's say you're driving from here to LA, and you're driving, you leave now and you arrive in 5 hours, the distance, the time, you divide one by the other, you get your average velocity over that period of 5 hours. So it's the change of position over elapsed time, delta S, change of position, over delta T, the elapsed time. Okay, but what is instantaneous velocity? When they stop you in the freeway and they give you a ticket for driving 90 miles an hour, that's not, the police officer doesn't care how you drove from Berkeley to, San Rafael. If they stop you on I-5, you're driving 90 miles an hour, that instantaneous velocity has only to do with how fast you drove, at that moment of time, more or less, plus minus 1 second or so. Well, so that means that you take average velocities over shorter and shorter time intervals, and you take the change of position over change of time, and you'll take the limit. But now we come to the question of what is limit? What does it mean to take the limit? And that's one of those central questions of calculus, which took a lot of time to figure out. In fact, since you're in Berkeley, Newton talked about fluxions, and he was struggling with this idea of letting this delta S become smaller and smaller, but never letting it be zero. So you're dividing basically zero over zero in some vague sense, and that bothered a lot of mathematicians and physicists and philosophers at the time. This was 300 years ago or so. And Bishop Berkeley, after whom this town was named, wrote a whole treatise where he made fun of Newton and claimed that he completely tore calculus of Newton apart because he was talking about ghosts of departed quantities. Because when you make this delta T smaller and smaller, you have this quantity that's sort of diminishing, disappearing, departing. It's a ghost. What does that mean? It makes no sense. For him, it made no sense. Of course, he was a philosopher. He really did not understand calculus. In fact, throughout history, philosophers made fun of mathematicians for talking about nonsense because they really didn't get into the meaning of the math they were criticizing. So, this is a very tricky thing, taking the limit of this quotient. So what does it mean to take a limit? Well, let's say you take this delta T, this time interval, to be smaller and smaller, 0.1 second, 0.01 second, and so on. You find the change in position for those time intervals. You divide and see if that quotient approaches anything. Well, maybe the quotients look like this, 0.9, 0.99, 0.999, and so on. So if you look at these quantities, if they approach something, get more and more nines in the tail, what does that approach? Approach number one, exactly. So this is what we mean by limit, kind of vaguely and imprecisely speaking. We'll make this more precise later, and this is where the most feared content of this course comes in, the epsilons and deltas, which we will mention, but we will not insist upon them too much in this course. Yet you will be exposed to that, and so brace yourselves for that. It's not that hard. It's just you will have to get used to a certain type of thinking that makes this concept of limit mathematically well and precisely defined. Now, related to this problem of finding instantaneous velocity or instantaneous speed, different but related, is the problem of the tangent to a curve. So suppose you have a curve, the black curve, and you take a point, you take the tangent. Well, how do you take the tangent? Well, if this curve is described by some function, it's the graph of some function f, then what you have to do is you take these difference quotients. Say, let's say this point, this red point on the curve, corresponds to the value x equals a. So you evaluate your function f at x, and then A, you compare them and divide by X minus A, you look at these so-called difference quotients, and then you take the limit. Okay? And that's clearly related to what we were doing before. And that limit is the slope of the tangent. This is one of the things we'll be focusing on soon. Now, let's go back to the cartoon guide to calculus. I don't know if you can see this. Can you read this from the back? It's an interesting page. It's about Zeno. Zeno of Elea, who was a famous philosopher. You may have heard of Zeno's paradoxes. I'll talk about one of them. So here's how he reasoned. He said, think hard about change, and you may reach some pretty strange conclusions. In ancient Greece, for example, Zeno of Elea thought about change and convinced himself that motion is impossible. And here's how he reasoned. Motion is a change of position over time. At any instant, no change of position takes place. Therefore, there can be no motion at any instant. But time is a succession of instants. Therefore, motion never takes place. So how do we get there? Well, let's see. So this type of reasoning is illustrated by the famous paradox of Achilles and the tortoise. They're racing, and the idea is this. So you may have heard this, but let me recapitulate. So let's say Achilles runs twice as fast, for simplicity, twice as fast as the tortoise can run. Of course, the tortoise should have some advantage. So the tortoise starts, you know, that I didn't bring my laser pointer. But look at the top picture. So there's that dotted line going vertically. That's where the tortoise starts. And so when Achilles reaches that line from which, you know, the point at which the tortoise started, the tortoise has gone ahead. So let's say the tortoise had 1 kilometer of advantage and goes twice as fast. So when the Achilles reaches that point where the starting point for the tortoise, the tortoise has already gone or traveled 0.5 kilometer. Now when Achilles reaches where the tortoise is after, you know, that first time period, the tortoise has gone ahead by another 0.25 kilometer and so on. So he catches up, the tortoise advances. He catches up with the previous, where the tortoise was before, and the tortoise advances. So he never catches up, right? He never reaches the tortoise, which, of course, is nonsense, I mean, in the sense that it contradicts our intuition and our experience. So how do we explain this paradox? So this kind of summarizes this. So suppose Achilles travels twice as fast as the tortoise. The tortoise starts 1 kilometer ahead of Achilles. When Achilles traverses 1 kilometer, the tortoise is ahead 0.5 kilometer. When Achilles traverses this 0.5 kilometer, the tortoise is still ahead 1/4, and so on. So how do we deal with this? How do we explain this? Well, here's one hint. The hint is to look at this, what's called the infinite series. We won't be studying series in this course, but in 1B you will study them. When you think about this deeply, you see that, or you think hard, you see that you have to really add these numbers together. 1, 1/2, 1/4, 1/8, and so on. And what do you think you get in this? If you keep adding, you get 2 exactly. Now 2 is less than infinity. So I'll let you figure this out, where the paradox is and why this cannot happen, why this is a paradox in the sense that it challenges your mind, but of course it doesn't reflect reality. We can talk about it later if you want. Okay, here's another problem that I mentioned before that's related to this problem of instantaneous velocity and problem of the tangent. It's the problem, the area problem. So what is the area bounded by, let's say, a circle? Any circle of radius r. Okay. Any two circles of the same radius have the same area, right? Well, here's how Archimedes, one of the smartest men or humans that ever lived, here's how he dealt with the problem. He invented the so-called method of exhaustion that goes like this. So you inscribe in your circle, you inscribe and circumscribe polygons, regular polygons with more and more sides, and so n-gons, and you look at their areas. Of course, we know to find the area of a triangle, of a square, of a pentagon, a little harder, but it can be done, and so on. Polygons are easy, regular polygons. And then clearly the area of the circle is between the area of the inscribed and the area of the circumscribed polygon. And if you want to get a better and better estimate, you let this n, the number of edges, go to infinity in some sense. And in the end, you get the area of the circle. And the answer he got is pi r squared. This is how you can define pi. So any circle in the world that has area that has radius r has area of pi r squared. What about if you have a different kind of curve, a curve that's given as the graph of a function? So here, this black curve is defined by the equation y equals the square root of x. How do you find the area under that curve between 0 and 1? Well, you can use a similar method, and this is the method that we're actually going to study, the method that leads to the idea of the Riemann integral. What you do is very simple. You draw a bunch of rectangles under the curve, and then a bunch of rectangles whose top side is over the curve. So you under-approximate, you over-approximate, and you take more and more rectangles, hoping that in the end, you'll get some limit, some well-defined limit. And in this case, you do. And actually, Archimedes was able to do this more than 2,000 years ago. He was well ahead of his time. And the area that you get in the end is 2/3, it turns out. Okay, this is one of the things we'll learn how to do. So this is what I just described. Let's see. So it turns out that the area problem and the tangent problem are very closely related to each other. So, you know, taking those difference quotients and taking their limit on one hand and computing the area on the other hand are very tightly connected. And the content of this statement is in the so-called fundamental theorem of calculus, also discovered by Newton and in some form or shape by Leibniz. Computing the area under the graph of a function is in some sense inversely related to finding the tangent to a graph to the graph of a function. So here's a formula that I'm just flashing out in front of you that we'll spend a lot of time studying this formula. So one of the goals will be to understand this formula. Okay, it's called the fundamental theorem of calculus. And this is actually it for today. I know there will be a lot of questions about various issues. So I'm going to end here today. Read sections 1.1 and 1.2 for next time. And if you have any questions, come here and you can talk to me. And if there are any GSIs in the room, you can also come and see me. So we end a little early today, but that's fine.